Join Aubrey Masango evenings on 702.
My guest is Zakira Vardy, and it's a she, Aubrey. It's a she. Zakira, good evening to you, and my deep apologies for calling you a he.
No problem, Aubrey.
I've just been reprimanded very, very strongly by my producer, Tatings, is stop calling women men. So my deep apologies.
No problem about that.
So the campaign by your organization aims to do what?
So this was a campaign that was launched last year. It's called Election Watch, and it aims to get as many observers, these are election observers from both civil society organizations or individuals who are just interested in being active citizens, to observe the 2024 elections, share their feedback onto a common app or common system, and thereafter give civil society more broadly a grassroots indication of what's taking place at voting stations and the ability to, based on the sample of information that we have, pronounce on the integrity of the elections. So this is the first time that civil society is doing something like this collectively. Previously, we've had, you know, election observers go out from different organizations, but it's the first time that there's a collective effort towards this.
I've just, in my introduction, talked of the fact that the former president, Jacob Zuma, at one of the rallies of his newly formed MK party, seemed to be making suggestions that the IEC cannot be trusted in terms of the integrity of the upcoming elections. He made all sorts of comments that suggest that there is a deficit of trust, at least from him and his party, around the integrity of the IEC. Not too long before that was the DA that wrote a letter to a number of Western countries, particularly the United States, asking that they too should be involved in the elections, to really monitor the integrity of those elections. Here you are with your your campaign. Is there fear that the IEC might not deliver a free and fair election?
So we've been quite critical about what we find to be unwarranted attacks against the IEC. Since democracy 30 years ago, the IEC, we think, has carried out a sterling job in carrying out elections. And we hope that that's a trend that will continue into this year. We have to obviously, you know, stand at an arm's length from all that is taking place, and have oversight over the IEC's own processes in voting stations. And I think we want to see what takes place on election day and thereafter be able to pronounce on it. But at the same time, we think that it's quite unfortunate that political parties are beginning to insert into the public narrative, well before an election actually takes place, views that seek to undermine the IEC and in some way almost discredit the elections before it even is underway. And, you know, for the ordinary voter, what would the ordinary voter be thinking? Why should I even go out to a voting station if already political parties are saying that these elections may be rigged or that the system may be fraudulent in some way or the other? So I think political parties have a responsibility to, you know, provide accurate information. And if they believe that the IEC is not up to scratch, then they must be able to produce some sort of evidence that backs it up, without just floating these narratives into the public domain for whatever purposes they may have. So that's our concern, I think, with the way in which things are being carried out. And that critique is both towards the MK party, DA, as well as the ANC, who has hinted at foreign meddling in the elections without really providing any evidence of what gives them, you know, this sort of sense that there'll be this sort of meddling.
Help me understand then, Zakira. Your campaign is also to try and do what? I mean, if you are going to be having more members of your campaign at the various IEC voting stations and so forth, would it be wrong for somebody to suggest that yours too suggests some level of mistrust of the system?
I don't think so. The IEC itself has encouraged election observers in every election. In our engagement with them, both, you know, for the previous elections and in different civil society organizations, as well as the current election, they've been quite open to getting as many observers as possible. And the thinking behind it is that the more transparent an election process is, the more oversight there is, whether that, you know, they are foreign or domestic observers that are watching the process, the greater the credibility of that process. And in the long term, the better the ability of, you know, if there are any systematic problems that are there, any issues that arise, it's something that can be addressed with the IEC directly. If there are problems of violence or intimidation, for example, that play out at particular voting stations. But in the long term, it lends a hand towards improving the electoral system and the voting system itself. So that's the thinking behind it, which is very different to, you know, just putting a narrative out there into the public saying there's going to be a problem with the upcoming elections and not giving any indication of what that problem may be or what the flaws of the system may be. And I think that is the fundamental difference here.
Yeah. You appreciate, though, that there could be a misconception given that context, the context we find ourselves where political parties are messaging in a particular way, and the fact that yours is called Election Watch. You appreciate perhaps that that misconception of the similarity in motivation behind your campaign and perhaps some of the things that have been said by political parties about the IEC?
Definitely. I mean, you know, there's always room for that kind of misconception, and people may perceive things in a way that it isn't necessarily so. And we've been quite careful in the way we've structured the messaging around this campaign. So this is a positive campaign. It is about active citizenry. It's about the ordinary individual who may not be linked to political party campaigning work during this period being able to feel part of the elections beyond just putting an X on their ballot. And we have also looked at international examples in recent years. So if you take both the US as well as in Brazil, where post-elections you've had supporters of Trump in the US and in Brazil supporters of Bolsonaro coming out after an election, and almost because of the way in which those leaders have structured their messaging, then come out in a very disruptive way and then dispute the electoral results and cause a huge degree of instability in society. And we are quite worried about that sort of scenario playing out here. And I think this, in this way, we have to, you know, almost proactively challenge that kind of scenario if it does play out. And we hope that political parties and political leaders here will have the responsibility to guard against that kind of behavior.
Are we to understand, therefore, that the campaign by yourselves will sort of give legitimacy to whatever the IEC will be doing on that particular day?
If the IEC's processes are free and fair, so we go in with a historical context of that having been the case previously. But in this election, it doesn't mean that we're going to take that for granted either. So we'll be going in, you know, with quite an objective sense of what needs to be looked out for. And in every election, there's a set of criteria that is produced that an observer checks against, and that's an objective criteria. And it's something that's, you know, seems quite simple, but ultimately it does lend itself towards the freeness and fairness of an election. So did the voting station open on time or were there delays? Were ballot boxes set up in front of observers, in front of, you know, other IEC staff and party agents? Were ballot papers during the counting process counted in front of everyone? Did party agents have a chance to look at the final count and take a photograph of it? And all of those things, which seem relatively simple in a little voting station in a small town somewhere, cumulatively add up towards the overall credibility of the elections itself.
What specific issues will defend our democracy be looking at through this campaign? Are there specific systemic issues that you would be most interested to prioritize as you watch the process? Or is it just general?
Well, I think the one issue that is of concern in any election is that of voter intimidation and violence. If there is violence at a particular voting station, it would be of huge concern to us. And that's something that we hope to be able to track in real time on the day and be able to escalate to the IEC and perhaps to law enforcement. We are aware, however, there are limitations with election observers. So election observers don't get physically involved in whatever is playing out at the voting station. You are meant to observe, take notes, and then share that feedback to the IEC, or in this case, to the collective of civil society organizations that are participating in the process. So that's the limitation that comes with it, but it's something that we'll be looking out for. Importantly for us is really the counting process, how that unfolds, if it's done in a way that is open and transparent. So those, I think, are the two big things that we'd be looking out in this election. The one thing, Aubrey, that, you know, perhaps in this election is something that we're not going to be able to sufficiently track is really the full process of an election. So observation work doesn't necessarily just begin at 7 a.m. when voting stations start. It's meant to begin, you know, throughout an electoral cycle before and well afterwards. So looking at issues of messaging before the elections. And there are a number of civil society organizations that are beginning to specialize in tracking of disinformation, calling out where there is disinformation, and basically looking at social media, the use of AI, which is a new phenomenon in elections around the world. So those issues are something that civil society is beginning to look at, but it's something that we really need to step up our efforts in towards the 2026 and 2029 elections.
Again, we've heard from some political parties or, you know, spokespersons of certain political parties that if things don't go their way, they'll be held to pay. We've already heard it. We've seen, you know, a number of people suggesting that if things don't go the way that they would like to see things happen, there's going to be held to pay. I imagine that that means violence. The elections haven't taken place, but we've already heard that kind of rhetoric. We've already started hearing that kind of tonality. What is democracy? I mean, what is Defend Our Democracy going to do about that?
So we have condemned that, you know, the messaging that suggests that. Again, we call on political party leaders and those on party platforms to be responsible, bearing in mind the kind of chaos that unfolded in July 2021. However, Aubrey, again, and this is when we speak about the limitations of civil society, we can condemn, we can call to order, we can rally broader society around a particular call. You know, we can call on communities to be vigilant and community leaders to exercise leadership during particular periods. But we are not law enforcement. So we don't have any say on what the police do. We don't have any say on what crime intelligence or our intelligence services more broadly do. All that we can do is call on the authorities, particularly law enforcement, to be proactive and to not disappoint the public, to not disappoint the country in the way that was during the July 2021 unrest. So already these statements that are being made, there should be some sort of proactive measures that are put in place to prevent this. You know, the Electoral Code of Conduct is quite clear on issues of violence, on issues of intimidation. And, you know, perhaps one of the ways that could be undertaken by civil society, and this is something that should be considered, especially by organizations who make use of legal avenues and have the capacity to do so, to look at challenging some of these narratives legally.
What do you think those proactive measures should be, and why do you think we didn't take them?
Well, I think we need an intelligence services that's able to pick up on this and act proactively, put in place necessary warning systems, and ensure that the on-the-ground response of the police force is ready for such a situation. We all know that during the height of state capture in the country, the intelligence services was quite impacted by state capture and corruption in the country. And some of that came out during the Zondo Commission of Inquiry. And when you have a hollowing out of institutions, especially law enforcement institutions, we see the impact of that in what unfolds on the ground. So you have the July 2021 insurrection, and there's almost no preemptive measures that are put in place for that kind of situation, and no planning in place. And we've, you know, there were scenarios that were unfolding during that period where police stations were simply being run over, and there was no ability to contain the situation. Similarly, I think political leadership was caught off guard during that moment. So it took, you know, 3 days to almost a full week to ultimately contain that situation, even at the political level, as well as at a community level. And I hope that this time round, our country is more well prepared for that and can at least put in place measures that, you know, caution political leaders and others who make statements that in some ways perhaps incite violence or incite or hint at some sort of instability.
And yet we had, I think, was it last year or the year before? Can't remember when it was. The shutdown by another political party that was convincingly monitored. I mean, there was police presence everywhere. I ask that question because sometimes the suggestion is made that the authorities are more alive to the possible threats of certain political parties and not of others. Is that something that yourselves as Defend Our Democracy delve into in your thinking?
Well, you know, it's perhaps a bit of both. In relation to the shutdown that you mentioned, if I'm not mistaken, this is the EFF's call for a shutdown.
Yeah.
I think that society was a bit more prepared for what the eventuality of that call could have been. And therefore, early on, you had, you know, different leaders from different sectors saying, look, either don't participate in the shutdown, or if you are participating, ensure that you don't get involved in any sort of activities that are violent, for instance. So there was that preemptive messaging and awareness from different sectors of society. And at the same time, I think law enforcement was out. There is a case to be made, though, Aubrey, that, you know, perhaps there's a bit more of a presence of law enforcement or preemptive measures being put in place because it's a particular political party. In this instance, I hope that law enforcement understand the importance of an election process in the country. The need to guard that not in the interest of any political party, but in the broader interest of democracy. And that should be the sort of guiding pillar for work around law enforcement in this country. It's not about playing party politics. It is really about ensuring the safety of this country overall.
Are we too immersed in party political wrangling to be able to appreciate the value of things being done for democracy's sake? I ask this because even in the case where Nosiviwe Mabisa Magula at the moment is alleged to have done certain things, questions are being raised about what the motivation is. She's done it. Other political party leaders have done it. Where every pursuit that is against them for what is I suppose on the surface a simple civil or a criminal matter is then quickly politicized. Do you think we are too immersed in that kind of political thinking to simply accept that things are going to be done for the rule of law and for the preservation of our democracy?
So 2 points on this. You know, as civil society organizations, we don't want to necessarily get involved in the political you know, the political games or the political agendas that may be underway. And there's the easy way to do that is to simply look at what is the rule of law. And if the rule of law suggests that someone may potentially have been involved in actions that are corrupt or may have been involved in some sort of criminal activity, then the law must take its course and people must be able, you know, the broader public should be able to lend support to the process that unfolds. So that's the first point. And I understand that perhaps it may be perceived as somewhat naive given the depth of political context in this country and how that may in some ways be a motivating factor behind certain investigations, for instance, as we've seen, you know, unfold in certain instances or claims by political leaders that that may have been the case. But I think that the rule of law is something that we can all agree on. It's something that there are far less grey areas than I think in general political context. So that's the first point. The second point is that we sometimes tend to not give credit to the level of, I think, democratic order of process that we've managed to achieve in 30 years. So when you speak to, for example, people in other organizations in different parts of the world, there's a sense that South Africa may actually be doing very well in, for example, the hosting of electoral processes. So if we look comparatively at other countries around the world and the issues that they may face in the electoral processes, South Africa is actually a very good example. And things that we take for granted may not be the case in other countries. So one example, perhaps, is that our counting system, so as the results come through from regional centers and then they get fed into the overall election headquarters counting system, and you see that on your TV screen and all of the journalists that are present at the headquarters where the counting and all of the political parties are on the day of elections, that's on the big screen right in front. Everyone is getting that information at the exact same time. So journalists, the public, political parties, and the IEC is getting that information at the exact same time. Mm. And what that prevents is, for instance, the IEC may be having the information beforehand, and then maybe a particular political party going to the IEC and strong-arming the IEC into changing those results before it comes out publicly. So that's a huge measure that is put in place to ensure that results are not cooked. And it's something about our democracy that we need to appreciate because it actually establishes a very good principle.
Is that a genuine fear that a certain political party could go in and strong arm the IEC?
I don't think so. And it's precisely because of these systems that we've put in place. The IEC has indicated that they are quite confident about their systems. When the issue of foreign meddling, for example, was brought in by the ANC, the IEC indicated that it's strengthening its systems. That being said, you know, no system can necessarily always claim to be foolproof, but our systems have proven to hold the test of time previously. So in this election, we really need to see what unfolds.
Please join us as we talk to Defend Our Democracy Executive Director, Zakira Vardi, as she tells us a little bit more about their initiative and campaign called Election Watch. What are your thoughts? What are your questions? What are your misgivings, if you have any? Give me a call. Zakira Vardi is my guest's name, and we'd love to hear from you. Brighton Mudau says, good evening, Aubrey, and your guest. It is alleged that during elections, the authenticity of ballot papers should be verified. The allegations state that there is a ballot paper which is designed to rig elections. This ballot paper, for example, a voter will put X on party A, and soon after dropping it into the box, that X will navigate itself to party B, where is its final destiny. Since I'm curious about this, is there any truth to this?
So when a voter comes into the voting station for this election, we've yet to see what are the exact processes that are put in place. But from previous observation work, when you come into the voting station, you know, you first go into the check, you get, you are, you know, ticked off the system, etc. You get a ink mark on your thumb, and then you get your ballot papers. At the back of the ballot paper, it there'll be a stamp. So as the ballot paper is pulled out of the book that it's in, it will be stamped at the back in front of you. And that's important because unstamped ballot papers are not counted, because, you know, anyone can then get ballot papers from anywhere and then stuff it in the box. So it has to be stamped. You then take those ballot papers and you go to your voting booth, you mark your X, you put that in the box. Party agents and observers who sit there through the day have sight of those boxes. So when those boxes are full, the IEC person that's in charge of the center will come in, seal that box, and put it on the side where everyone has sight of it for the duration of the period. And once the voting is then complete, those boxes are taken, they are opened up, and they're emptied onto tables at the voting station. And they're then counted one by one in front of every person that's there. That's all of the party agents, observers, all of the IEC staff. And that building is sealed so that no one else is coming in and no one else is leaving the building. So that's counted one by one, and every ballot paper is shown to whoever is standing there. So representatives of all parties can see exactly who the X is made against. And if they're satisfied that it's next to, let's say, party Y, it's put down on a pile for party Y, and it's counted in front of everyone. If there's a dispute, the counting process starts all over again up until everyone is happy that everything was done in order and the process was free and fair. And in some voting stations, that can go on into the next morning because there may be a dispute that's raised and the counting process starts again and again up until everyone is happy. Once those results are finalized, it's written on a sheet of paper, and party agents and observers have the right to take a photograph of that paper, and that paper is then put into a tamper-proof bag that is then carried by the IEC person together with all of the ballot boxes that are then filled up with the votes, sealed once again, and taken to the regional IEC counting center. So in a way, political parties themselves have an idea of what the count is like in different regions or in different districts, even before those numbers reach the regional tallying center. And if the regional, you know, a party person will be sitting and getting from all of the different regions results coming in, and if those results then don't necessarily tally up with what the regional center or IEC's results are looking like, a dispute can be taken forward and raised, and you know, those checks and balances can be put in place in that way. So the process is extremely transparent. It's absolutely difficult to do the kind of vote stuffing that may be suggested.
At least four parties, and maybe more, would have raised these issues. And I suppose I'm asking the same question in a slightly different way, because, you know, the frequency of this issue concerns me a little bit. The ANC has, as you've rightly shown us, suggested that there might be some foreign involvement in the election that might try to sort of disturb the process. I think they were suggesting that Israel might be involved in that process. They've cast that aspersion. The DA has written a letter to the United States and many other Western countries to suggest that more observers need to be deployed to observe the legitimacy of the elections. The EFF has raised questions around the involvement of SATU, the Teachers Trading Union, suggesting that perhaps they might be partial to the ANC because they form part of the Tripartite Alliance as one of the affiliates to COSATU. MK has come out through the former president, to suggest that indeed there is some sort of reason to be concerned about the freeness and the fairness of elections. All of these are major political parties in this country who are making these noises. Why do you think they are making these noises? Is it because they want to preempt, I suppose, a particular conversation after the elections because they know something? Or is it simply because they just want to obfuscate and muddy the waters for an argument that takes place after the elections should they not perform as well as they do? What is the reason for this? And I ask it that way because you seem to be suggesting that, you know, we historically speaking, there's not much we should be too worried about, at least as far as the IEC is concerned.
So it would be difficult for me to suggest why political parties are making certain arguments. I think that the thing is, when political parties make those arguments, they must be able to back it up. If we talk, for example, about foreign meddling in the elections, how? What is the precise concern that is being raised? In our country, we don't have an electronic voting system, so everything is done manually, and I've described the process that unfolds. So how are they suggesting, at what point of that process is the ANC suggesting will there be foreign meddling or, supposed foreign meddling in the electoral processes? If they mean, for example, hacking of the IEC system, that's something that's very precise and could be raised. Every political party, the IEC has regular engagements with various political parties in the lead up to the elections. There's a kind of committee that is set up for political parties who are contesting, so the IEC engages directly with them. And that's one channel in which some of these issues can be raised, very critically, can be raised with a particular purpose so that the IEC can address it, rather than simply putting out the narrative, in the public with no sort of clearness about what the specific issue is that, or what the specifics around the issue are. When it comes to writing to Western countries, South Africa has never had a problem with getting foreign observers or foreign observer missions into the country. But I think when you call on a foreign government to seemingly intervene in a process that's unfolding here, it does more harm than good to the cause that you're trying to advocate for. So, there was a call from the DA to fund voter education work here, to fund observer work here. And I'm not too sure why the DA is making this case for civil society organizations. If civil society organizations thought it was necessary, and yes, civil society organizations do think that voter education work and observer work is absolutely necessary and must be funded, but should be making a case for it themselves rather than a particular party asking a government of another country to intervene in that regard. So I think that the precise issues must be put in the table in the through the channels that are available to political parties. Yes, they can be raised publicly because every political party has the right to do so. But I think when it's put out in the way that it is, in a way that it's almost fear mongering before the elections, it's not helpful to the public when it's done in that manner.
You don't think that there's any legitimacy behind those fears, those concerns?
Well, parties must be able to indicate where or the details about their claims so that they can be a real assessment if there is legitimacy or not. So if people, for example, the ANC said that there's foreign meddling or they think there'll be foreign meddling, the IEC has responded indicating that we are looking at improving our systems. The IEC, I think, may be limited in what information it's able to share, or security information about its systems it's able to share publicly. So there's an indication that they have heard the political party and they're willing to address the concern. If there's the statements that are being made, for example, we've seen, someone wearing an MKK shirt recently, at what seemed to be a protest outside the IEC headquarters. And the claim that was made by a particular individual was that the IEC is a tool of Cyril Ramaphosa, the IEC is a tool of the ANC. What is the evidence that backs that up? The matter that's, you know, underway before the electoral court is something that will be adjudicated on and pronounced on. So what evidence do you have that the IEC may be supporting a particular political party over another? So I think that, you know, political parties really must have some sort of, take some sort of responsibility before the election period to in itself ensure that the election is free and fair, and that the process leading up to it is not one where there's fear-mongering in the public about the upcoming elections. We want as many people as possible who have registered to vote to participate in these elections, and to feel confident that when they go into the voting station, their vote is going to be counted. It is going to have, or they are going to have, the ultimate say about who governs this country, who governs the different provinces. And political parties need to be giving voters a sense of surety that their ballot papers and their acts is going to be counted.
We are told that this is probably the most hotly contested national election we've ever had. Talk to me about your assessment of voters and voter education in this country. Are we, as an electorate, educated enough about the technicalities of the voting process and what voting actually means to participate effectively? I ask this because there are already people who are saying, I'm not going to vote because each time I vote, nothing changes, right? Whereas somebody may argue, well, that's why you need to vote, because if you don't vote, indeed, nothing will change. Those kinds of statements, those kinds of sentiments keep coming up again and again. Have we done enough, in your assessment, Zakira, to have a sufficiently educated enough electorate to be able to say that ultimately our election will have reflected the will of the people?
So, probably our citizenry, South Africans generally, I think, are quite politicized. So, people understand politics. They're very well aware of, you know, what's the political drama of the day that's unfolding. So, people are not unaware of the importance of politics. But at the same time, I think that there is a disillusionment about politics and whether it's ultimately serving the needs of people. And hence, perhaps, the feeling by some that they wouldn't like to vote, or they feel that perhaps their choices are limited, even though we have such a multitude of political parties that are likely to be participating in the upcoming elections. So that's the first point, that there is perhaps a sense of disillusionment. Our call to the public is that even if you are disillusioned, you should go out to vote. It is important. And given the, as you indicated, how hotly this election will be contested, I think especially at the provincial level, perhaps, where things will be extremely tight in certain provinces, every ballot certainly does count. And where, you know, you feel that it, you know, perhaps your ballot isn't making a difference, I think you just need to look at the role of smaller parties increasingly in different settings, and the kind of say they have perhaps in oversight committees, or simply in raising particular issues. You know, this election will also have independent candidates that will be standing, which is a very new phenomena in terms of provincial and national elections in our country. So that's something that we'll have to see how that pans out. The second point is that while I think the electorate is politically aware, very well aware of the choices that they have, perhaps we're not as technically savvy as we should be. So, a few days ago we were at the Conhill Human Rights Festival that was taking place, and some of the organizations that we were speaking to were saying that they are getting a sense from particularly younger people coming up to them saying, oh, well, how do I register for this elections? But the registration period is long gone. So that's the first thing. Secondly, is that for this election, it's the first time that we'll have an electoral process under a new or amended electoral act that allows for independent candidates. It's the first time that we're going to have three ballots and not just two ballots. And I don't think that there's sufficient understanding as yet about what will be on those ballots and what exactly you'll be voting for. So that work in the next 2 months is quite critical. I know that we are quite pushed for time. Even civil society organizations who are doing voter education are quite pushed for time because elections are around the corner. And I think similarly the case with political parties and the IEC. But we need to do what we can during this period. And we hope that people would be able to read up about this third ballot, what it means, and what the ballots will look like on the day. So that that's quite important. And thirdly, I think, is the issue of, you know, just the processes of or education around what takes place at voting stations. Mm. There's still a lot that needs to be, I think, learned by both the public, you know, political parties on the ground. So there are general laws that I think political parties are familiar with, for example, not to campaign within the voting station. But a few years ago, just to share anecdotally, I was doing observation work, and one of the voters that were at a particular voting station saw me come in with my IEC booklet and a few papers and wanted to know, am I trying to cause chaos? Am I coming in with ballots to put in the box, you know? And I thought that that was quite worrying, that there wasn't an awareness of what an election observer was, even though it was fully branded with the observer kit. So quite a lot of voter education, I think, still needs to take place.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about your thinking and opinions around the various polls that we've been seeing, various pollsters and organizations and research companies doing all sorts of polls. Big debate ensued last week around this, the suggestion being that these polls are nothing more than a way by which a particular narrative, a particular way of thinking is being generated by politically aligned research companies or pollsters. Talk to me about the function of polls and what it is that they are meant to do for us, and are they doing that?
So there's always going to be disputes about polls and whether they are factual, whose interests they are serving. And we need to go into an election period cognizant of those debates. So there are polls, for example, that we'd be able to look at and say, okay, that's something interesting. We need to take cognizance of it. And others that we need to look at and say, look, this should be preparing us for some sort of eventuality. For, I think the polls are important for political parties, so they can assess where they are, perhaps an indicator of where they need to improve their messaging, you know, assess whether their campaign is taking off and whether they are making impact in particular provinces or nationally. So that's important for them. For the public, I think it gives an indicator of what may be in the future. So what we can take from all of these polls, and I'm not going to go into, you know, the percentages in each province and what that means for different political parties. What it could mean at a national level is that, you know, we may well have a situation where the governing party may not rule with the kind of majority that it has had previously. The ANC could make it by, you know, a very slight majority, or would need to go into coalition with one other party at a national level. Or we could have, as some indicate, perhaps and opposition parties would like to argue the opposite way, opposition parties come together and then govern the country. So I think at a national level, we need to expect that, you know, perhaps there may be some change, perhaps there may not be. You know, the ultimate decision that people take in May may be very different from what's unfolding now, what's the mood in the country now. So ultimately, polls may not necessarily be 100% accurate. There may be political occurrences or incidents that happen or news that breaks in this next period that changes the mood of the country in a particular way. The second thing that perhaps is a given is that in some provinces there are most likely to be coalition governments. And we need to be, I think, increasingly more savvy perhaps as the public on how we deal with coalition governments. So we've seen in an area like Johannesburg, for instance, where coalitions are extremely unstable, and that impacts the administration of the city to a point of near collapse. And we need to be, I think, as civil society, at least in the next month, we are going to be looking at how do we deal with coalition governance in different provinces. If this happens at a national level, how do we deal with it to ensure that there's overall accountability? And it's not simply, you know, one administration after another of different sets of coalition partners that come into being and then collapse. And then there's absolutely no accountability because people are in a particular office for just a very short while before the next person comes in. So how is the continuity of the system? What's the accountability mechanism that can be put in place? And what in a coalition system lends itself towards stability? Do we, for example, have an instance where a very small political party gets the position in the city of Joburg, for example, the position of mayor? And in the instance of a province, then, for example, that political party gets the office of premier. And what does that mean for stability? So those are the new things that I think we will have to grapple with as the public. But it's something that we need to be preparing for.
Where are the ANC's banners and... have you seen that? Have you noticed that? I was saying to my wife, where are the ANC's banners? I'm not seeing any ANC banners. I'm seeing everybody else, but I'm not seeing any the ANC's banners. Do you have any insight into that, Sakura?
No, I certainly don't. I mean, I've seen
an absence banners
of a few parties, a few of the ANC included in there. But that's really something that I think we need to be posing to the ANC directly.
We will certainly do that. Zakira Vardy, thank you so much.